Leadership 101. So you guys have been following us. This is the last week, week eight. We've gone over a few things so far. Again, if you guys remember, recall, kind of walked you through my leadership and my kind of background. And we also went through my personality a little bit, kind of told you about, you know, how I'm a confident individualist. And we went through some Christian leadership points. We talked about keeping your eyes on God, number one, point number one. Also checking your motivation, why you're doing what you're doing. And in the midst of it, making sure you're tapping back in to understand why you're doing it. And also walking in integrity. Talked about that. You can't lead people to somewhere you've never been. Also, be the type of person that people want to follow. I talked about, you know, nobody wants to follow somebody who's angry or mean all the time. You know, so if that's your leadership style, you need to change that and work on that. Be teachable. Again, that's another principle that, you know, basically be a lifelong learner, as we used to call it. Make sure you're not the type of person who just thinks you know it all and no longer needs to learn anything else. And a point I hammered in a lot is have a council of people you can lean on, in which, again, I appropriated the assistant pastor's term of board of directors, where, you know, you have people that you lean on, you can talk to, that speak into your life. And we talked about the importance of having, you know, internal and external board of directors. Talking about own your mistakes, you know. You mess up, say you're sorry. You know, don't try to sugarcoat it. Don't try to talk around it and make excuses. You know, you made a mistake, say you're sorry. We also talked about making other leaders. It's our charge as leaders to train others behind us. And again, the only way you know if a person is trained on something is if you personally train them to do it, or if they come to you with a piece of paper saying, I've been trained in this. Right? Other than that, there's no way to say that person's been trained on something. That is your responsibility as a leader to make sure that you're trained. And then last week we talked about knowing your limits and knowing your limitations. We have that picture up there about, you know, the check engine light. You know, we try to do everything on our own, and then we realize quickly we will lose energy, we will lose motivation, and we won't want to do it anymore. And then other things will start slacking off. We'll start missing the motivation. It won't be about God. There's a whole bunch of things that fall in line when we don't acknowledge our limitations. So that was a really quick recap of everything we talked about so far. And this week, we're going to wrap it up on a pretty bow and talk about some of the pitfalls that we can fall into as leaders. So we'll go ahead into the next slide. So the first pitfall we have up here, and hopefully you guys can see this, a blind spot bias. So I love this one, and I'll give a little description of what it is. As you can see, if we read it up here, it says blind spot bias is a cognitive bias that causes people to be less aware of their own biases than of others, and to assume that they're less susceptible to biases than others. So a good example of this, and we see this all the time, blind spot bias can cause someone to assume that other people's political stance is influenced by various biases, whereas their own political stance is perfectly rational, right? So everybody else is messed up, but I see clearly, right? And they don't understand what's going on. It can cause people to assume that they're less likely to experience various biases than their peers or the general population. It can cause people to be bad bias detectors when it comes to their own biases, even if they're good at detecting the biases of others. It can cause people to fail to realize that they have displayed a certain bias even when they're given explicit description of the bias and are asked whether it could influence their reasoning. So even when you explain it to them, they still can't see it. Right, and the great thing about this, and the reason why it is called a blind spot bias, is because if you knew what it was, it wouldn't be a blind spot, right? You would know what it was, and therefore you acknowledge your bias. You say, okay, let me work to eliminate it. However, it's a blind spot because you can't see it. It was never brought to your attention. I like to look at it as this. You know, everybody knows what a blind spot is in your vehicle. Say you're stopped at a red light or something like that, and you know that you can look in all your mirrors, but there's a certain areas on the side of your cars that you cannot see unless you turn around physically and look to see. Some of the cars nowadays are really, you know, fancy, have the sensors, and so it lights up on your, you know, on your mirrors that show you that there's somebody in your blind spot. But either way, you can't see it, right? Unless you turn around and look at it. And the thing about blind spots, which is interesting, is even if you see it, you turn around, you look at your other stoplight, now you know it is no longer a blind spot. But the light turns green and you start driving, and now you're 100 feet away, your blind spots have changed. That is the interesting thing about blind spots. They're never always the same. Even if you learn one of your blind spots, somebody reveals it to you, you notice it, and you learn to acknowledge it, there's gonna be another one, right? And that, and the thing we have to understand as people is we are susceptible to this, every single person. And if you think you aren't, that is your blind spot. It can cause people to assume that their judgments and decisions are objective. Even in cases where they recognize bias in their judgment or decision-making process. I love this because even when you know you're biased in your decision-making, you still believe your judgment is the best judgment, which sometimes it is. Not knocking that, but you have to understand that this is a bias that I have based off of things that I've experienced and I've seen in my life and things that I've learned. And a great example of kind of this, I remember when I was in the military, I just put on E6. And so I was sitting in the office one day, it was like 2013, so 11 years ago, sitting in the office this particular day, and I was working with a female CMS sergeant, and black man, white lady. She's awesome. We would sit there and just have all kinds of philosophical conversations, just talking about life and the military and different things like that. This one particular time, we were talking about different things, and I was telling her how the challenge of being black in the military, especially being in intel, there's not many people who look like me, right, in the military, in intel career field. So I'm there, most times in the meeting, I am the only one, right? So there's other people who's doing all the talking, and I'm just in there, and I'm looking around like, okay, yeah, it's just me in here, right? And so we have these conversations about the challenges of that, and I was talking about when I was young in the military, I remember being upset one time, and I got really upset, I was angry, I was yelling and stuff like that, and this one guy pulled me aside, and he was like, look, I get it, you're upset, you're angry, but you cannot afford to be angry. Express it like that in front of everybody, because you stop being just you, you become now an angry person. People are scared of you because you're big and you're black. And I was like, I thought about that. I'm like, man, he's got a point, because people's faces, when I got upset, they were not looking like, oh man, this airman is upset. They look like, oh snap, this dude is mad, right? So it's a very different look, right? So it's a different thing. So we're talking about these different things and different challenges that I have. And this was the things, and she was like, oh, that's really cool. And then she started explaining to me her challenges that she had in the military as a senior level woman trying to direct a very heavily male influenced military. And she's like, she's like, at least you are a male, because when you speak, at least people listen to you. When I come in, I have to earn every single thing I say. If they don't believe me off the bat just from my, my stripes or whatever I have on my arm, they challenge me, they ask me more questions, they think I don't know what I'm talking about. And she's like, if I get mad, it's that time of the month. Oh, she just liked that. She's just, this is that. And I sat there and I had this conversation with her, and you know what? It opened my eyes to something I had never seen before. So going forward in my career, one thing I always did, even if I engaged into a female senior leader, I always, even if she was angry, I stepped back and I took a thought, and I thought, I have no idea what it took for her to get to that level, who she had to fight, how she had to talk to people, because nobody respected her. So yeah, she may come off a little brash, she may come off a little, little rough around the edges, but it's probably because she had to in a male-dominated, career or position like in the military. So those are different areas where, I could have been like, whatever, you're just, complaining. And she could have said that to me, oh, you're just complaining. This is not the truth. But here's the truth. We all have blind spots in areas we don't see until somebody points it out to us. Hey, you may be a little biased in this particular area because you never experienced it yourself. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And we have those kind of one-on-one conversations. And from that point in time, that's not a blind spot for me. Doesn't mean other things won't be a blind spot. I don't know what my blind spots are. That's the reason why they're blind spots, right? Another thing, an issue that blind spots can do, it is cause you to assume that your personal connection to a certain issue is not a problem and is actually a source of accuracy for you. However,
somebody else's personal connection to this issue becomes a problem for them, right? That is another blind spot. It's cognitive bias. Again, so we say this, I'm giving all these examples. So how do we combat it? Well, first thing you do is what you're doing right now. You learn about it. You start researching. Okay, what is blind spot bias? What is this that exists that I have not been aware of this entire time? You start researching it. You look it up. You learn a little bit more about it. Second, you accept the fact that you're susceptible to being, you know, dominated by this. I can have blind spots. I do have blind spots, things that I don't know about. Lastly, I talked about this before, have a circle of friends, people that you trust, a board of directors that can see things that you can't. I love this. So, for example, me standing right here, I have no idea what's behind me. I could turn around and look, but it's still a blind spot. Now, if I have someone standing in front of me, they can see behind me. The things that I can't see, they can see. I can also see behind them. So their blind spots, I can let them know, hey, somebody's coming behind you, right? They can look, move out the way. However, without me, somebody else seeing behind them can acknowledge that. Now, let's expand this picture a little bit. Now we have four people in this circle, right? So now there's even more areas where you can see there's less blind spots. And now I have more people looking out for me. I got one person in front of me. I got two people to my side. So, because if somebody's directly in front of me, they can't see what's directly behind me because they're blocked. But there's somebody right here as well, they can see on the side. They can see on the side. That's why you surround yourself with people who can see the things that you can't see. They have to have a different perspective as you, right? If everybody looks the same, we got four people on my team and we're all standing side by side looking the same way. We still all have the same blind spots, right? Now, if we're all in a circle looking behind each other, looking to the side of each other, we can see what's coming. We can take care of each other. That is the reason why it's so important to surround yourself with people who can speak into your life, because we all have this blind spot. We all have areas in our lives that we don't see. And when it comes to ministry and when it comes to leading a ministry, we cannot be an army of one. I remember those old commercials, I'm sure you guys all seen them, army of one, and the army got rid of them because they realized, you know, we're not really an army of one. You know, we should work together. But that's kind of how we tend to go through things, especially if we're called to be a leader. Hey, I'm the one in charge. I got to do everything myself. Well, it's not necessarily the case. Remember, we talked about the board of directors. We talked about having people around you and trusting other people to delegate different tasks. So we have to be the type of person where we stand, we have people that surround us and can see behind us and see our side and see the blind spots that we don't have, and then trust them when they come to us and say, hey, this is an area where you're lacking in. Okay. Well, I never considered that. You know, I just considered that I was right all the time. Right? That's generally what we say. We don't, and we may not say it, but that's how we conduct ourselves, right? Oh, you know, okay. I appreciate your concern, right? But then we go off and do what we want to do. It is very important to study this and learn that we all have blind spots. And again, once you learn what one of your blind spots are, it is no longer a blind spot. Now it's on you to fix that and work to combat that. But you will have others, just like I have others. There's areas where I don't see clearly and I can't see at all, because they are my blind spot. And it is up to other people who love you and care about you. That's number one. They have to care about you to tell you that. Because, let's just be honest, if it's somebody you don't know, somebody I don't know, and they come tell me, hey, JT, you need to do this, this, and this. I'm like, bro, first of all, get out my face. You're too close. I don't know who you are. Right? I don't know who you are. We don't listen to people we don't know. My mom has this saying, and I love it. She says, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's number one. We have to establish ourselves in people's lives until they know that we got their back and the only thing we want is the best for them. Then we can speak into their lives. But don't come up and try to slam people with the Bible the first time you meet them. Even in ministry, this is very important. If you're out trying to reach people and you slam them with the Bible before you even let them know that, hey, God loves you, I love you, right? They're going to be like, okay, I've heard this before. Here you go, slamming with the Bible again. And as leaders, Christian leaders, it is important we lead our ministries with love. And love and truth go hand in hand. But people have to know you love them first, right? The same thing with your kids. They have to know that you love them. They're not going to listen to you if they don't know you love them. And we operate the exact same way. The second one, pitfall is the Dunning-Kruger effect. I love this one. So I'll explain a little bit. Well, let me read it first. The Dunning-Kruger effect is a cognitive bias whereby people with limited knowledge or competence in a given domain greatly overestimate their knowledge or competence in that domain, while high performers often underestimate their skills. The concept of Dunning-Kruger effect is based on a 1999 paper by Cornell University psychologists David Dunning and Justin Kruger. The pair tested participants on their logic, grammar, and sense of humor, and they found that those who performed in the bottom quartile rated their skills far above average. For example, those in the 12th percentile self-rated their expertise to be on average in the 62nd percentile. This is a quote. "Those with limited knowledge in a domain suffer a dual burden. Not only do they reach mistaken conclusions and make regrettable errors, but their incompetence robs them of the ability to realize it." I love that quote, right? Because what they're saying is not only are they dumb, but they're too dumb to realize they're dumb. It's hilarious to me because, and you see this all the time. And again, I'm not just pointing to them and they, right? I've done this. Every single person is susceptible to this, right? Just because you're an expert or you're really talented in one area, that does not translate to all other areas, right? I may be smart in the military, but when I go to another job, I'm not smart in that job, right? I may be good leader in this one area, and then I get put in a position to be a minister over this area. I'm not automatically good in this area because I was good in one another area. And that's what we do, right? We tend to think that we're better at things because we excelled in one area. That's not how it translates, right? And every single person is guilty of this, and we can be. And it goes on to say, even smart people can be affected by the Dunning-Kruger effect because having intelligence isn't the same thing as learning and developing a specific skill. Many individuals mistakenly believe their experience and skills in one particular area are transferable to another. And you see this oftentimes. And you see this in companies. You have a high-performing person, and all of a sudden they promote them to a leader over another area. Well, they don't have expertise in that area. The best thing that person can do is realize, I know nothing about this area that I'm asked to be a leader of. So I'm going to bring people along with me who know and have them show me, and so I can learn. It takes a little bit of humility. That's how you combat this. You realize that I don't know everything. I'm not an expert in this. I may be good in this one area, but it doesn't mean I'm good in another area. You have to make sure that you're looking at this objectively. So how do I avoid it, JT? You told me all this great stuff. Honesty and routinely questioning your knowledge base and conclusions you draw rather than blindly accepting them. And we tend to do that a lot. I mean, especially if we're the leader, right? Well, this worked at my last job. This worked in my last ministry that I was in charge of. I did it this way, so I'm going to do it this way. Well, there's two things that are different about that. You're in a different place, and you have different people that are working with you, right? You cannot adapt the same kind of mentality. If you're a parent in here, or you're a teacher, you know this already. If you have multiple kids, you cannot raise one kid the exact same way you raise another. It's not going to work. They're different people. And if you have siblings and your parents try to raise you the same way as your siblings, you're like, man, come on now. No, I don't even like sports. Why are you putting me in sports? Yeah. it's very different. And yet we adopt this same kind of mentality to become leaders, right? One size fits all. This is the way I lead in this area. I'm going to lead the exact same way they say. There is something to be said about consistency. That's not what I'm talking about. You want your yes to be yes and your no to be no. And you want to have some standards. That is not what I'm addressing. What I'm addressing here is the idea that because I'm so good in one area, I'm going to do the exact same in another area because it works all the time. And that is not how it's supposed to work. We have to learn. We have to acknowledge that we don't know everything and question the reason why we believe this. Or why do I believe this? Right? And it's the same thing we talk about that with our belief in our faith in Jesus. Why do I believe in Jesus? Question that. Ask those questions. Start picking that apart. Dig in the scriptures. Why do I believe this? Because if you don't know why you believe something, then anybody who's smooth talking and knows a little bit of something and quote a couple of different other things and then they throws you off, oh man, maybe you're right. Maybe Jesus isn't real because you have no foundation. You don't even understand what you believe. It is the exact same thing with leadership. You know, if you've done it the same way all the time and you go to another place and all it takes is somebody coming in, you know, you're not doing it right. You're like, oh, snap. Maybe I'm not good at all. That's not what it is, but it's about taking that humility and taking a step back. You may be right, but here's why I'm doing it. Because I've done enough to look at this, and I know these people that I'm working with, and this is the reason why I'm doing it this way. I know you may not think it works, but trust me, give it time and it will. But you have to have a reason for why you're doing it. How does it make sense? Individuals could also escape this trap by seeking others whose expertise can help cover their own blind spots, such as turning to a colleague or a friend for advice or constructive criticism. Again, like I said, having those people that surround you and speak it to your life. The opposite of Dunning-Kruger effect is what's known as imposter syndrome. So imposter syndrome is people who struggle with imposter syndrome believe that they are undeserving of their achievements and the high esteem with which they are, in fact, generally held. They feel as if they aren't competent or intelligent as others might think, and that soon enough, people will discover the truth about them. So I say this is the opposite, because people who struggle with imposter syndromes tend to think that I'm not worthy of where I am, you know. I always say you should be a little bit uncomfortable when you first start a new spot, right? Because everybody starts feeling like, oh, you know, maybe I'm promoted too high. Maybe I got elevated too quickly into this position. It should scare you a little bit, but it should also drive you to want to learn more, right? It said about 25 to 30% of high achievers suffer from imposter syndrome. And interestingly enough, women suffer more from imposter syndrome than men. So how do we fight it? How do we fight this feeling that I don't belong where I am? I got put in this position of leadership in this ministry. Man, I've only been a Christian for like a year. And all of a sudden they're asking me to, you know, lead this prayer circle. I don't even know how to pray. Right? How do we do this? So you reflect on concrete achievements. You share your feelings with loved ones, preferably someone outside of the setting where you're in. Also, number three, expect to make mistakes. Understand that you're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And if you go in thinking that you have to be perfect every single time, you're already setting yourself up for failure. And then it's just gonna reaffirm your feelings of inadequacy, right? I don't belong here. Look, I just made a mistake. Seek out a mentor who charted the same path as you, someone who's already done it. Right, you see this all the time, and if you listen to, you know, big name CEOs, CFOs, or whatever, and actually sit down and talk with them, and they'll tell you, hey, there's some people that I lean on, that have done this before me, that I talk to. These are my mentors. If people in those kind of leadership positions have mentors, why do you think us at our position do not need mentors? If you don't have somebody speaking into your life on a daily basis, or a weekly basis, or monthly, however often you need, then you are setting yourself up for failure. Because how can you possibly hope to lead if you have nobody leading you? You have to have mentors. Every single successful person will tell you, I have a mentor. I have a few mentors. As a matter of fact, I was just on a meeting call a couple days ago with a lady, and she's very high up in our company, and she was telling us about, you know, her mentor. She's like, I had a mentor who did my job before me. I have a mentor who used to be at the company who was a little bit higher that I talked to. And this lady. It was a lady, and all her mentors are women, which is awesome because she needs to talk to people who have charted that path that she's trying to chart, right? And not saying that men can't speak into her life. You know, she has men that speak into her life all the time. But for where she's trying to go and the experiences she needs other women to speak into her life. And that was great, and I was awesome hearing that from her. And those are the kind of people that we need, especially when we have these feelings that I may not be good enough. Right, the opposite of Dunning-Kruger, where you think you're good enough for everything. You know, now you're in imposter syndrome. I don't think I'm good enough for this, right? You see this too. I mean, let's just break it down to, you know, you're young and married, and now you're having a kid. You're like, snap, I'm not ready to be a father. I'm not ready to be a mother. And what am I going to do? My own mother and father were terrible. Or, flip side, my own father and mother were great. I can't compete to that. You compete with that, right? Whatever your situation is, you know, that imposter syndrome comes in. It doesn't have to be, we don't have to be all high and lofty. Let's break it down to an easy level, right? Just going throughout your day, you know, you see your friends and, you know, you're, you know, young and whatever. Like, I remember I didn't get married until I was like almost 28 years old. So a lot of my friends are already running around, got married. I'm like, man, you know, what's going on? Maybe I'm just not, maybe I'm not mature enough. You know, maybe not, I don't have this together. And you start comparing yourself to others. And you feel like maybe I'm just not an adult. You feel like you're pretending. That's what imposter syndrome is. Understand, you look back over your achievements in your life and say, okay, I do belong here. And then you reach out to other people to help mentor you along your path. And that is how you get past that. So, that's it. What I want to do is I want to spend the last few minutes, we went over a lot in the past 8 weeks, and I want to spend the last few minutes hearing from you. What are you guys' thoughts about everything we talked about over the last 8 weeks, including today, and how you feel about it and how you're going to use it to kind of propel your career? Yes, please.
Do people with the imposter syndrome tend to find ways to self-destruct at times?
It's possible, but self-destruction can come in many forms, and it can be from people who are successful as well and know they're successful, right? It's just you do see it often with people who have imposter syndrome because they feel like I have to, you know, pretend. And whatever that means, I have to, you know, show that I got it. Because what tends to happen is we don't want to admit that we're not good. You know, we tell ourselves we're not good enough, and then we try to pretend that we have it instead of doing the work to get ourselves better. Because let's be honest, imposter syndrome comes from getting to a position where you don't think you can achieve. Sometimes that's true. What got you there is not going to be what keeps you. And a lot of times, right? What got me promoted to this next level is not going to help me do well at this level. So you have to level up. So there's a reason why we have imposter syndrome, right? But it should be a trigger in our minds to say, I need to get better. I need to get other people around me to teach me, and I need to learn for myself to get better, not just sit back and fake it. So yes, to your point, that does happen as well.
You know, you were talking earlier about quick to admit your mistakes. And you know, there's never a wrong time to do the right thing, and there's never a right time to do the wrong thing. And Dylan was talking to me a while back, and he said, you know, the Bible says don't let the sun go down on your anger, you know. And it's kind of like, you know, I've heard some people say, you know, that the Lord in the Bible where it says patience, let patience have its perfect work, you know. The Lord's changing us in a crock pot. He's a crock pot cooker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not a deep fryer. 30-second deep fryer and you're done and you're ready to go do this. He's a crock pot. He cooks you slow and steady so the meat falls off the bone. But that also happens with our anger. You know, if you don't address it quickly, like you were saying, admit your mistakes promptly. Because if not, if somebody doesn't admit their mistakes promptly to you, or you don't do it to do it for them, then it's going to sit there and slow cook. The devil's going to do the same thing. He's patient with it. He's patient too. He's going to sit there and add, hey, they did this. Or what about this? Did they really mean this? And it's going to gradually make you madder and more hateful and more hateful. And like he was saying, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Approach those problems. Admit them. And that's one thing he doesn't want to do. He wants you to divide. I mean, that's what he does. He wants you to divide and separate. So, you know, I thank you for that. You know, do admit your mistakes promptly.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And as a leader, again, the things I've talked about are just the basics, right? These are the 101, right? We haven't gone into, like, the deeper stuff of this. But what I will say, though, is one thing I love about this is as a leader, we are held to a higher standard. So everything we do is magnified. So if we're not the type of person that forgives, we're not the type of person that admits our mistakes, then that's amplified even bigger to the people that follow us. And they see it. I mean, think about your children. They say they live with you all the time. They see how you are at home versus how you are in the streets and how you want everybody to see you, right? So you have to, your leadership, and it starts in the home, has to be integral. It's the same way you lead inside your home has to be outside the home, because people will call you on it and it's expected and it amplifies, right? Your example is bigger than what you say. Like people, like the old saying, like people will remember very little about what you say, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And it's the same thing with your children, the same thing with people that you're leading. You have to be the type of person that is integral and does the things that you're supposed to do, because if you don't, it is amplified in their lives. Somebody, yes.
Couple things. This is just a little funny thing that I thought of when you were talking about the Dunning-Kruger effect. Kenny Rogers has a song about that, I am the greatest there's ever been, and he thinks he's like really good at batting, and he keeps throwing the ball up and batting it, and then he does it a couple of times and he misses, and he strikes himself out. And at the end of the song, he says, somebody says something like, you struck out. And he's like, yeah, even I didn't know I could pitch like that. So it was like, there's no, I'm not bad at anything. I'm good at all the things. But also when you were talking about, and you brought it home with the four people, like people being able to watch your back, watch your blind spots. I was telling Mom, and she told me to share this with you guys. When we were training to enter buildings, when I was the police officer, and we would enter buildings, especially in the case of an active shooter, you literally would have three people back to back to back so that every area is covered. And then each person goes a separate way. You know, we use taps, or we tell them like this side, that side, so that every single area is covered. And you're not surprised when you come around a corner or an open door or something of that nature. Every hallway, everything is covered.
That's such a great example, because what can happen if there's a blind spot? You could die. And it won't just kill you, it'll kill everybody on your team. Right? So that's a great point.
So I wanted to say something that about aging, and as an insight to people that are aging, and to young people that are dealing with people that are aging. I am very good at my job. And I'm almost like that Kruger whatever thing, because I think I can do everything. And the reason why is because I know to ask questions. And my boss asked the most ridiculous things for me to solve that. I'm like, I'm a freaking paralegal. I don't do that stuff. But I finally kind of come to the place for the last 10 years or so that I thought, you know what, this is why I have this amazing job, is because I may not know, but I know how to ask questions, and I can find out. I can get somebody else to solve this problem for me if I find the person that has the knowledge. But as you get older, you will find that people treat you differently when you ask questions. They treat you like, oh, she's just old. She's just losing it. She doesn't get it anymore. You know, I see that a lot of times. There'll be a joke out there, and I've kind of lost the thread of this day and what's funny and all of that. And I'll be like, I don't get it. And I think, oh, this is how you used to think about your mother-in-law when she'd do that. You're like, really? You don't get that? You know? But I would just say to bear in mind, if you're aging, that is just something that happens. And if you're younger, treat your elders with more respect and don't shame them when they ask questions that they don't know, because you will someday be that person.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, too. And what you describe is not the Dunning-Kruger effect. You actually actively going and learning and understanding you don't know and asking those questions. Somebody who suffers from the Dunning-Kruger effect doesn't know, and they don't care to know. They just assume that they're right, right? And that's the difference. We'll have one last.
You know, something that just came to me was, I used to be a personal trainer, and I was certified and stuff like that, and I worked at 24-Hour Fitness. And one thing that my old fitness manager told me was, this goes along with what you're saying, you can't see yourself. He told us that. Even the most elite athletes in the world, Michael Jordan, Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, all these guys, they're the most elite athletes in the world, and they need personal trainers. It's not that they don't need them. They have to have them, because whenever you're under stress and whenever you're under fatigue, you can't pull your own eyes out of your head and look at your body and watch your form. And I can't remember the percentage of what the injuries that are caused, but most injuries aren't caused from impact. They're called from misplacement and bad form, like in knee injuries from external rotation of the angle of the foot, and then stepping wrong or something like that. And then, so it's really important to have somebody sitting there saying, "Hey, man, I see you doing this. I see this and that." And on that note of being of forgiveness again, we see that in the prophet of Jonah. Unforgiveness comes from fear, you know. And then the first thing that it says, that people that will not enter the kingdom of heaven is the fearful, the cowardly, the fearful. And, you know, we see through the prophet of Jonah that unforgiveness is from fear, because whenever God told him to go to Nineveh and preach repentance, he said, no, they've been so mean to us. if they repent, they're going to turn right back around and be mean to us again. So he was fearful that they would get close again and then be mean to him again.
Yeah.
That's why he did not want to go and tell them to repent. And so, you know, that's funny that, you know, I've been that way before. You know, I've been, you know, I can only say that.
That's such a great point, too, about the having a trainer. So it's exactly right. You know, you can't see your own flaws. You can't see where you need to get better. And not necessarily flaws, but where you can get better. That's all I got today. Thank you guys for, you know, attending this 8 weeks, and hopefully you got something from it. All right.